will begin with the developments regarding Syria. The international community is now formally requesting UN authorization for military force in Syria. The UK making the request, drafting a resolution, according to British Prime Minister David Cameron, quote, all necessary measures. That would be an open-ended authorization that would include military force. Four U.S. Navy missile destroyers are in the eastern Mediterranean now, within range of Syria. They are equipped with Tomahawk remote control cruise missiles, widely believed to be the preferred mode of attack. A limited response, according to congressional and White House sources, aimed at preventing more use of chemical weapons, not regime change, although the Obama administration has long said that President Bashar al-Assad has lost any legitimacy as a leader of Syria. Russia is expected to fight the request to use force at the United Nations. Israel is taking defensive action, handing out gas masks to its civilians. Iranian leaders have said that any attack from the West on Syria would result in an Iranian attack on Israel. Let's talk about all this with two people now, both with direct knowledge of how the U.S. makes these difficult decisions to respond militarily. Ambassador Kurt Volker is a former United States permanent representative to NATO. Also with me, Phyllis E. Oakley, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State and adjunct lecturer at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Welcome to both of you.
It's nice to be here. Good day to you.
And let's speak with you first. Phyllis Oakley, you were in the State Department when the U.S. made the decision to launch a strike in response to the U.S. embassy bombings in Africa by al-Qaeda. Do you recall the limitations of an offshore airstrike such as the ones being contemplated using cruise missiles that are at least in reports about what there might be as a response to Syria right now?
Yes, I was leading the Bureau of Intelligence and Research in the State Department at the time of the bombings of the two embassies in East Africa. And the decisions, of course, were made at the White House, and various people were contributing. The question was not really one of technical ability of being able to launch missiles or to hit certain targets. It was always a political question. Was this the correct thing to do to achieve U.S. goals?
And is there a temptation to do something just to show that you can respond versus develop a policy that actually will have an impact on the ground?
There certainly is that tendency. And my own view on the two raids, one into Afghanistan and the other into the Sudan, was that there was a very strong feeling in the Clinton administration that we had been hit twice and therefore we had to hit back twice. Now, what if we had just chosen to raid Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden was reported to have been? I think he was there. He escaped any damage. I think the whole world would have been in support of U.S. action after the bombings. So I think the moral of that for me is that you have to be extremely careful in choosing targets.
Phyllis Oakley, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State and adjunct lecturer at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Kurt Volker, the limitations of an airstrike in the absence of very specific military goals. Does symbolism get you anywhere here?
I think it gets you a limited distance. There are two reasons that you might consider using force in Syria now. One of them is to deter the future use of chemical weapons, and that's what the administration is focusing on. The other one is to try to have some strategic impact on the course of the war in Syria, and that's where there doesn't seem to be any appetite whatsoever, either in the U.S. or in Europe. In terms of a deterrent, it has to be sufficient enough for both the regime in Syria and then also for potential onlookers who also have access to chemical weapons to feel that it's not worth that usage. So I think a substantial response is called for.
But would NATO then want to have on its record essentially a policy which says, go ahead with your little war there in Syria, just don't use chemical weapons, because that's what the message would be?
Yeah, I would be surprised if this were done as a NATO operation. And I think what you're going to see is a lead up trying to build both a substantive case based on information that's made public about what the regime in Syria did, as well as a legal case about how this violates international law, use of chemical weapons, international humanitarian law, to say that there is a sufficient basis for a limited response like this.
We're talking with Ambassador Kurt Volker, former United States Permanent Representative to NATO. So to both of you, Phyllis Oakley and Kurt Volker, back in the old days of responding to the East Africa bombings, the Kosovo operation in the Balkans, the question of U.S. permission or international sanction of an operation like this was a little more straightforward. Now, you know, years later, we have any number of instances of the U.S. acting unilaterally. What is the likelihood that the U.S. would actually seek formal recognition of a response to Syria because of this chemical attack? Phyllis Oakley?
I think it's very clear that the U.S. is not going to act unilaterally. Having lived through some of these legality debates in other circumstances, whether it was Kosovo or going into Iraq, you get into a very, very unclear, murky situation where there are people who can argue it either way. The point is, you've got to define what your goals are and your reasons for doing it, gather as much support as you can, and then proceed according to your own decisions. There's never going to be a magic phrase or a magic bullet, if you will, that is going to make this completely legal in the eyes of the world.
Ambassador Volker, there are reports in the New York Times that Kosovo may be some sort of model, an air campaign, an extensive air campaign over Serbia that was authorized only by NATO and not by the international community. Do you think it's a model?
First off, the notion of acting unilaterally and the notion of acting without a UN Security Council resolution are not the same thing. Unilaterally means by yourself. The U.S. acted in many, many instances together with others in carrying out activities. And I think that that's what the administration would try to do with or without a UN Security Council resolution. Then you get to the question of what makes something legal or not legal in international law. And if you go back to the Kosovo time period, there were first efforts by the U.S. and others to seek UN Security Council resolutions, and they were thwarted at the time. And then there was also a very strong doctrine articulated at the time by the UN Secretary General Kofi Annan about humanitarian intervention, which has since progressed, if you will, over time into a discussion about a responsibility to protect in international law if a regime is deliberately killing its own people. Now, that can be pretty open-ended, and there's been a lot of caution about applying that as a general rule, but it just illustrates the point that there's more to consider in international law than simply a UN Security Council resolution. It'll be a complicated argument. It won't be as clean and simple as a UN Security Council resolution might be, but I think that's what you're going to see that would justify a limited response.
Ambassador Kurt Volker, former United States Permanent Representative to NATO, and Phyllis E. Oakley, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State and adjunct lecturer at Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.